Hi, it's Mike Church, founder of the Veritas Radio Network and the Crusade Channel. Maybe you didn't know this, so let me clue you in. We are a listener-owned radio enterprise, meaning we're the little guy, the underdog, a David in a stadium full of fake news Goliaths. So, in exchange for your listening to this awesome preview of one of our shows, Puddle's Pity Party, promise me you'll download our free app and use it to listen to that show when it's live. And number two, consider joining us and becoming a paying Founders Pass member by going to crusadechannel.com and clicking the join button at the top of any page. Now that's not asking too much, is it? So go ahead, relax, and enjoy the following feast of original programming exclusively here on the Crusade Channel. King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers. Cota Villa. But the Republican leadership did not and does not share the electorate's concerns. Well, I got to stop again. Hold it. What the hell is that? Beep. In today's first hour, I also talked about, I witnessed another 501c3 non-government organization, non-profit, conflab on C-SPAN, where members of the Brookings Institute, senior fellows, called themselves, discussed American foreign policy. Why? So that their version of it can be implemented. Why? To grow government. Why? So the Brookings Institute can keep tabs on it. Why? Because you're going to make a donation to them to keep tabs on it. Why? So let me see if I understand this. I'm making a donation to you so that you can monitor a system and help it grow that I despise and don't want to help grow? Do I have that right? Is he right, Mr. Helper? Yes, he is right. That's in the first hour. That'll be rebroadcast today at 3, by the by. Cycle after cycle, Americans who vote to throw the rascals out get ever more unaccountable rules piled on by the same unelected bureaucrats. And look, it's not just the bureaucrats, it's the Brookings Institution or Institute. It's the Heritage Foundation. It's the American Enterprise. These people are all parasites. They are all parasites. They produce nothing other than larger government that you get to pay for. Time to put them to work. How to put them to work? End the union. End the confiscatory power that the feds have. My website at mikechurch.com. By the by, thanks to Miss Rita, who just says in the chat room, well, we have one generous soul in there today. Thank you. Mike just made a donation to your pro-life convention expenses. For $50. Thank you very much. Every dime counts. Thank you, Miss Rita. You're awesome. The link is on my website, by the by, at mikechurch.com. Yet such revolutionary sentiments do not amount to a coherent program to reverse the past century's course. Donald Trump's promises with regard to draining the swamp and restoring America's greatness would be extraordinarily difficult to keep, even were they matched with due understanding and forceful execution. But the ruling class is so big, so pervasive, and so committed to its ideas. Again, see first hour of this show, Mrs. Oglethorpe works for the Brookings Institution. Why is Mrs. Oglethorpe writing rules helping to craft foreign policy? Why? Because she can. How? Because the tax code allows it. Who? Well, if it's an expensive rule, you get to pay for it. Ooh. But don't worry, the Koch brothers got a tax write-off. This is just so agonizing, folks. I got to tell you. So few people see it. If you took Philosophia Perennis and you made it to the first four courses, through ethics, you'd see it. I guarantee you'd see it. Any attempt to by either side, wait a minute, where was I? Okay. But the ruling class is so big, so pervasive, and so committed to its ideas that sidelining it and even more undoing its work would require at least matching its power, pretensions, and vehemence. Or vehemence. In other words, it would take raising the temperature of our cold civil war's right side to match or overmatch the temperature of its left side. Statesmanship's task, however, is to maximize peace, not strife. Boy, howdy. American society is divided along... He's so right about this. Couldn't be more right. American society has... And I got an email that I need to find here. American society has divided along unreconcilable visions of the good held by countrymen who increasingly regard each other as enemies. Any attempt by either side to coerce the other into submission augurs only the fate that has befallen other peoples who let themselves slide into revolution. It follows that the path to peace must lie in each side's contentment to have it its own way. Like Burger King, right? But only among those who consent to it. This implies limiting the U.S. government's reach to what it can grasp without wrecking what remains of our national cohesion. Well, Mitter-Cotavilla, I don't believe there is a way to reconcile this and preserve the union. Now, we may be able to preserve the spirit of the union, as in common ancestors, common founders, commonality in language and other things. But governmentally speaking, I think you're arguing for a paradox. You're being very Chestertonian here. You're basically saying that the union is okay, it just needs to be fixed, but you can't be fixed, so it's got to be ended. But wait a minute, we don't want to end it because we want national coherence. No, you can't have it both ways. It's not going to work like that. Again, I believe. And, of course, there is the specter that the Catholic Church could once again pursue with the remnant becoming the faithful, being joined by many and becoming the faithful, a Catholic America, a Catholic continent America. You know, this thought that, well, I don't want to be in league with Mexicans. If the Mexicans share your Catholicism, they'll be awesome neighbors. They're not the bad guys. They were savages who were Catholicized, converted, and then were unconverted by pagan, atheist, diabolical, socialist hordes. Look it up. They're not the enemy. They simply aren't. We demonize and vilify Mexicans as Hispanics, as foreign invaders and the like. They're not. You know, they're trying to escape, or in some instances they are. They're trying to escape, basically, the socialism and the evil that has bedeviled the South American countries that were, by definition, socialist. And now, state of Mexico is socialist. 844-527-8723 is my telephone number. I'm not using the Lincoln example because Lincoln was wrong. Let's get to Cotavilla's conclusion. The common defense is the conclusion. I want you to read the whole thing. I've only read about a third of it. It's in today's pile of prep. Go to MikeChurch.com. Wait for the pile of prep to scroll along. You'll see it. Today's pile of prep for Thursday. Something about America and the Union. Revolution narrows statesmanship's focus to first principles regarding foreign affairs, too. The fundamentals never change. Foreign policy must serve internal needs first. It must speak softly and carry a big stick. In revolutionary times or times of profound discord, this approach is essentially important. Minimize interference in others' affairs so as to minimize occasions for others' interference in ours. And maintain such military capacity as would discourage anyone from taking advantage of our temporary distraction. The overarching challenge is to secure such respect from other peoples as may be needed to live safely and without interference as our body politic secures internal peace. George Washington's farewell, again, some of this is just not attainable. And it's not attainable because, look, the superstructure government that has been erected says that America's got to have a standing army. And you got about 10 million reasons, direct reasons, why that standing army is not going to be dismantled short of civil disobedience from the states themselves. In other words, states saying, look, you can forget the Dick Act. We're not sending our National Guard boys to Iraq anymore. That's what ought to happen anyways. You ought to be saying, hey, Trump, I didn't sign up and I didn't vote for you so you could send my kid to Syria. I didn't vote for you so you could continue to escalate the Afghan war, et cetera, et cetera. Responsible governments in the states would simply have conventions that would say, look, of course you have to have people that want to do this. We're a warlike people. We don't. But that doesn't mean that there are not unwarlike people out there that can make common cause together. And Codavilla's point is a good one. Why force those people to bake cakes for sodomites? Why force those people to live in urban cities where babies are murdered every day and they have to subsidize it? Why force people to live and acknowledge that a little boy must be called a little girl when they go like, no, I'm not going to do it. I don't want to do it. That's his overriding point. And he's correct. Contrary to Washington's warnings, U.S. foreign policy has oscillated between support for and opposition to governments and factions entangled in the Middle East's perennial struggle between Sunni and Shia Muslims. Like its predecessors, the Trump administration seems preoccupied, for example, with the question of which sect will hold the mayoralty of Mosul. That's a pretty good point. Yes, it's in America's interest to determine who the mayor of Mosul is going to be. Mayor Church, I want to vote in that election. Do you want to vote in the next election for the president of Syria? You want to go to Damascus and vote in that too? But attention to such questions exacerbates divisions that already exist among Americans. Our incapacity to make lasting changes in other people's arrangements with one another continues to subtract from the respect that we Americans need in order to secure ourselves from foreign interference at a time when this is crucial. Same is true of official U.S. pronouncements on world events that are not of our making and are beyond our control. Like I was saying earlier, who in the hell appointed the Brookings Institute to make universal American pronouncements about what American foreign policy is and ought to be? Who told the American Enterprise Institute or the Heritage Foundation they could do that? As a matter of fact, isn't it doesn't it inspire fear that we have entities that are so powerful and that think that they can? I ask this question often. Could the state of Georgia today war against the government of Syria, knowing that the Syrians are allied with the Iranians and the Russians? And if so, is Georgia willing, I don't know how many young men live in Georgia, let's say 2.5 million. Is Georgia willing to lose 1.25 million of them in a shooting war to do what? Miniatures, please, we gotta stop the sarin gas!
What?
You mean the sarin gas that we probably gave to ISIS for false flag operators? This is insanity here. Insert state here. Would your state be in Afghanistan? Answer, very unlikely. I can't say no for sure, but very highly unlikely. Well, there you have your answer right there. Would your state, if it were allowed to choose, would you choose to continue 17-year-long operations in Afghanistan with your soldiers? And hey, no debt. You don't get to ring a debt. No. This is a real shooting war. We got rid of that printing press. Oh, no, you got to go door to door and collect gold and silver coins. And if you don't have those, we're going to take items of property and we're going to sell them to people that will give us gold and silver coins for them. Hey, that motorcycle there, oh, I know you love to ride the hog every weekend. Well, guess what, Charlie? Sorry. Warmer dropped the big one, man. War's on. Would you do it? You believe that deeply in occupation of a 7,000-year-old peoples, namely people of Afghanistan? Really? What do you hope to accomplish? You think they're going to set up Hooterville in Afghanistan and the locals are all going to go, hey, I think I'd like to move to Hooterville. They have a Hooters there, too. That is a great place. Folks, you see the madness of this. This is madness. Only a people that are either too fat, too drunk, or too lazy sit around and do nothing about it.